You are listening to the Daily Reflection Podcast, messages of experience, strength, and hope from members of the recovery community. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show, and I hope you're enjoying a safe and happy new year. On today's show, Louis L. returns. As we've mentioned previously, we're taking a break, and we're going to fill in some of the blanks with episodes from Season 2. This one originally aired on January 1st, 2021. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Mike.
It's great to have you. And as you know, the format is we're going to read the daily reflection for today, January 1st, and we'll get into a little bit of a discussion of how that daily reflection resonates in your program of recovery. So, Louis, I'd like for you to read the reflection for us.
Sure. Daily reflections, January 1, I am a miracle. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. From the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 25. This truly is a fact of my life today and a real miracle. I always believed in God, but I could never put that belief meaningfully into my life. Today, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I now trust and rely on God as I understand Him. I am sober today because of that. Learning to trust and rely on God was something I could never have done alone. I now believe in miracles because I am one.
So powerful. This is one of my favorite reflections because I truly believe I am a miracle. And what I've experienced in my recovery is nothing short of miraculous. You know my story. And so I would love for you to share how this particular reflection resonates in your life, in your recovery. And I'd like for you to share a little bit about your story, if you wouldn't mind.
First of all, thank you, Mike, for asking me to be a part of this. Service work and recovery is absolutely essential in my life today. Obviously, when I chose January the 1st, I don't have this book memorized, so I didn't know what the reading was going to be. And then once I read it, it touched me on a number of areas. We're always told how the steps, everything's a suggestion because alcoholics in general are egomaniacs with inferiority complex and rebellious and don't tell me what to do and I can figure it out and I know I've got the answer and I know how my life should be and all these things which really applied to me when I came in and long before I came in. It's almost like I knew the first step before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And for those of you that don't know it, step one is I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. And so long before I had set foot in AA, I had a preconceived ideas as to what needed to happen to get my act in order, to have my life in order, to be able to pay my bills on time, to be whatever it was, and not just be this total chaos wreck wherever I went and to the point where nobody wanted to be around me. I was born just south of the border, this town called Tijuana, which is on the border of California. And then, but growing up, I grew up in Los Angeles in a predominantly white neighborhood in the Valley back in the 70s. And it was, so in effect, it was almost like, talk about not feeling a part of, because number one, I was Latino. And then number two, I was born in the place that where you weren't supposed to be from. And this whole idea of all the drugs and prostitution and all the stuff that you would go down there for, I took it upon me and it became a part of me. And so if somebody said something about Latino or Mexicans, and I immediately started viewing it as a negative thing. And not only that, just hearing in general that it wasn't cool to be from here or this, even from my some of my family, some of my relatives, you know, I'd go spend the summers in LA and San Diego with my cousins as a little kid, and I would be teased for it, you know? And so suddenly you don't want to be the thing that you are and trying to get away from it. And so, you know, just coming from that place all the way to a place where today, where I can embrace everything about me that I've been giving and these gifts and everything that's happened in my life and recovery. And a lot has happened in my life because I did start trying to get sober at a very early age, that I it's nothing short of a miracle.
Tell me a little bit more about what happened to lead you to believe that something miraculous happened in your life. I mean, I know I relate to the feelings of being different. We have very different backgrounds, but just the same, I feel like we share that in common, in that we apart from rather than a part of. So maybe dig in a little bit there.
The miracle part, and it's not even a miracle. I'm going to say miracles because from a young age and growing up and, you know, smoking marijuana and what have you, and just doing that whole scene before I became a full-blown alcoholic at the age of 16, when I left home to learn to ride racehorses to become a jockey, I already had it in my head that I was going to live till the age of 24, because I felt that my pedal was to the metal and I was just going full bore all out, just everything to the excess, everything. There's no reservations and going. And so I thought in my mind, I'll live to the age of 24 and that'll be it. And I'll be dead by then. So to be where I'm at today at the age of 59, it's number one, not short of a miracle, but number two, the fact that I, you know, when I was a jockey, I rode drunk and high and up for days and just operating from that. And, you know, riding racehorses that were going 40 miles an hour, just totally obliterated out of my brain under the influence, is a miracle that I'm here today, that I didn't die. I wrecked numerous cars, had three DUIs, and each one, you know, they were all over 0.2 something, 3, 4, you know, and that's just the way it was. And then in recovery, meeting who was my my former wife in AA, and just going through the relationship and having children, and then, you know, there's mental illness involved and all the things that come in, but just having to do all the work to clean out house, to get rid of the wreckage, to come to a place where I can accept myself, so I can accept you, so I can accept others, so I can be caring, so I can just not just say, yeah, I care about you, but kind of be detached, but to say I care about you and really mean it. To me, that's another miracle.
And that comes across. I mean, I've known you for quite some time now. And, you know, that's one of the things that attracted me to you in the program is, number one, your serenity. It seems like, you know, the meeting could be going in so many different directions. And we've been in meetings where it gets heated from time to time. And you always bring this calm serenity. And, you know, one of the things that I share about our relationship is the time we spent in Philadelphia, in Center City. And I was struggling at the time with some demons. And one of the things that you suggested was around meditation. And we, you know, we met for lunch at this little cafe on the corner, and we spent time giving me the tools to learn how to meditate despite the calamity around me at any given point in time. And we sat there in that little moment, and it was just miraculous to experience, you know, true meditation in the middle of the city with cars beeping. And I literally disappeared in that chair. And I want to thank you for that. But, you know, what do you have to tell folks that are listening to this? They might be listening to this thinking, that's great, these guys have sobriety, that's fine for them, but I'm a newcomer and I'm struggling day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute. What advice do you have for those folks?
Unique, resilient, potential. Three words that manifest differently within each of us. Every day, we bring our unique selves out into the world and are challenged to maximize potential and stay resilient when things don't go the way we initially planned. Hi, I'm Dr. Kate Lund, licensed clinical psychologist and host of the Optimized Mind podcast. On the podcast, I engage with top thought leaders in business and personal development on how to use our uniqueness to maximize individual potential and build resilience in the face of adversity. Join us today and begin your journey to maximizing your potential.
Well, you know, let me back up a little bit. I wanted to talk a little bit about God, because I'm going to tell you, when I first, I grew up in organized religion, and so when I came in, I had such a negative view towards it. Even though I had a belief in a higher power, I didn't understand it, just like it says here. And so just the reading, when I was reading it, I was thinking, I hope this doesn't turn people off into thinking we're trying to be holy rollers, because this is so far from it. This is something about, to me, the concept of God is to touching on something greater than me. And there's a power in that, and it's a power that I can't get by myself, and it's a power that I go to, and a resource that I go to help me in situations, even as such as this. When you asked me to if I would be part of this, I got nervous, and yeah, some of it was ego. Oh, I'm going to be on a podcast, but at the same time, I feel this sense of responsibility that I'd be able to pass on the message clearly to others, what I'm trying to say and what I'm feeling. And sometimes it's not easy to do that. So the whole concept of a God, of a higher power, of your own understanding, even if you're an atheist or what's the other word I'm looking for? Agnostic. You still believe in something. You still believe which could be you believe in nothing, you know, but that is a belief. And people don't realize that. I don't care who it is. Even if people say, well, I don't believe in that. Well, that's fine. You don't believe in that is correct. But there is something we all believe in. And it could be I believe that I don't believe. And so I certainly respect all that. But the importance is that we cannot do this alone. We cannot figure it out by myself. I need you, Mike. I need the guy next to me, the guy, the persons, the people on my phone numbers that I can reach out to tell me what, put a mirror up in front of me, because I'm not a good judge of how I'm behaving. I'm not a good judge of the things I'm saying or how I'm sounding. I might be cursing too much. I might be, any of those things. And even though I might enjoy it, it may not sound right in some settings. And so I need other people to tell me what's going on, and people with that have had other experiences, whether it they got divorced or they lost their job, perhaps, and that's just, you know, we're quick early on to come in and focus on the trials and the challenges that we come and the things, or my wife's leaving me, I lost the kids, I lost my job, you know. But then what ends up happening, we start, you know, you start going to meetings and you start coming around, and then things, it doesn't take long. Things start getting better. The heat starts to come off. Things start getting good. People are saying how great we're doing. We start getting to get patted on the back. Next thing you know, we start believing in that, and we forget where we came from. For me, I would forget. I was in and out for 6 years. I first came to AA at the age of 19 because I rolled my car at the Meadowlands, not at the Meadowlands, on the New Jersey Turnpike. And so I went to see the chaplain, and the chaplain introduced me to a horse trainer who took me to my first AA meeting in Orange, New Jersey. And the seed was planted at that point, and I knew that I needed to get sober, but I thought I had the answers, and I thought I knew what needed to be done. I had my own alibi. And eventually that alibi was collapsed in recovery. And that didn't happen until I was like 13, 14 years in sobriety. So good fortune is something to start to look out for once you start to get some success and thinking, oh, things are good, and start believing your own story. Oh, look, I got this. It wasn't that bad. My wife's not giving me a hard time. Everybody at work's telling me how great I'm doing. And you know, I'm still a great forgetter, and I can forget those things. And so I've seen a lot of people start drinking again because of good fortune, because the thing has passed. But if you're an alcoholic of my description, who drank around the clock, whose primary job was to protect my drinking, and as I was drinking a beer, I was thinking of the next beer, and that's how my brain operated. You know, it's just, I had to dive in and do this thing. So for the next 6 years, after the age of 19, I continued to be in and out. Like I said, I was drinking, drugging, and riding horse races under the influence. And I was making money. I was losing money. I was blowing relationships. I was burning bridges, and I would leave town to the next town. And eventually that just got old too. And I could see that I was sick and tired of being sick and tired doing that. Next thing you know, the next solution, which is the easy solution, was suicide. Suicide started looking good to me. And so I'm thinking, how am I going to kill myself? And I never put a gun to my mouth, but I certainly put a rope around my neck at the edge of the sofa. But I never followed through with it, but it was there. It was there. And I ran away. I joined the Navy because my father would always be, you need to join the military and learn some discipline. And that seed was also planted, you know? And so I joined the Navy. And once in the Navy, they saw I was a good worker because I was so used to waking up early in the morning to be at the racetrack. But I was getting in trouble all the time because of drinking, and they started sending me to treatment. After three times that they sent me to treatment, the last time I had just had enough. It was like I just made a decision that I wasn't going to drink anymore. And that's another miracle, because I, it was just something that came into my head. And at that point, I needed to be put away to dry out because I couldn't stop drinking. I had been around AA enough where I had all these issues, character defects, and all these things that I wanted to work on, you know, fear, self-loathing, shame, all these other things. And so once they sent me to rehab and I dried out, I told myself, I don't care what happens, I'm not going to drink again. And it'll be 34 years on January the 15th of this year. And will have gone without having to take a drink or a drug. And I wish I could tell you that I've never thought about taking a drink, or I could tell you that I hadn't come close, but I have come close to drinking in those 34 years. And it was three times. Two of those times were because of good fortune. And one of them was because things just got so bad. And that was in my first year of sobriety. And I thought I was going to run away and drink. But the other two, I was around some former jockey friends, and it was like muscle memory. One of them ordered his drink, vodka and tonic, and I was going to order whatever it was I was drinking. And it was like muscle memory. And my friend said, "Do you think you should be drinking? You said you hadn't had a drink in 2 years." And I thought, yeah, I guess I shouldn't. And I didn't. And then other time I was on a paddle boat on this Christmas party and with all these people, and this girl kept egging me on to drink because I was so funny. And I'm like, yeah, I'll drink. And then her and I can hook up. And you know what? I didn't drink. She signified like a dragon that was trying to get to me. And I actually stepped away from her, and I told my friend, "We've got to get out of here. I'm about to drink right now." And that was probably with about 15 years of sobriety. I haven't had any close calls since then, and I'm grateful for that. I try to stay very active in recovery. Anytime somebody asks me to do service work, I was raised in AA to say yes. Of course, within reason, if I can do it and if I don't have anything scheduled ahead of time, if somebody asks me to sponsor them, I'll say yes. And that is what absolutely keeps my miracle happening. And that's the way God shows up in my life. And so today, God for me is God as I experience him, because I certainly don't understand it. And if I could understand it and explain it to you, then he wouldn't be a God to me, because then I would be the God. And I'm far from that. I'm just a humble servant here trying to do the right thing, who still struggles with ego, who still struggles with being ultra competitive, who still struggles with sometimes being neglectful of some things. But I try to be here for the people that are around me. I try to be here mindful. I've remarried and I have a wife that is my absolute blessing. But I learned in AA what it took to be in a relationship and not just go after the physical attributes and or somebody that I felt I could rescue. You know, I have I have a partner today in marriage, and I had to learn. I had to learn what kind of relationship that I want to be in, because I didn't know. And that's what I say to myself. That's another miracle that happened in my life, because I came in knowing nothing. But bigger than that, I didn't know what I didn't know. And so to get from there to where I'm at today is nothing short of a miracle. And I am tremendously grateful for that. And that's how God is working in my life today. And I just hope to pass it on to others so I don't have to pick up that drink today. And I know I can, because I did it for years. And I know what will happen. The minute I put that drink in my mouth, that blind is going to come down and I'm going to go into that dark place. And God knows that that's not where I want to be at today.
Fantastic. I really, really appreciate the thoughtfulness around your program and the willingness to share this for those folks out there that need to hear it. Incredible. What does your program look like today? Maybe talk about the meetings that you go to. You know, feel free to mention the actual meeting if you want to. I know you started something relatively recently. Feel free to mention that. Maybe folks will join you.
Absolutely. So thank you, Mike. Thank you for the plug. And this is not a plug per se, because of Zoom. Obviously, we're all doing Zoom AA meetings all over the world. And I've had the opportunity to meet my sponsor who's in Redondo Beach. I've had the opportunity to go to meetings in China and France and what have you, and Australia. And it's just here, you know, I've been to meetings in Europe. I've been to meetings in China, and I hear people how they do it in other areas. And a lot of times it sounds different. Heck, down the road, they might be a meeting and it might be different. They don't do it. How do these people stay sober? My ego would say, you know, but the reality is it works for all of us and the message works for everybody, and it lands. Otherwise, our numbers wouldn't keep on growing and growing. So I'm in Florida now, but I was living in Philadelphia for a number of years, and that's where I met Michael. And I moved to Texas for a couple of years for work, and I met some more people there that I dearly love for the short amount of time that I was there. But I became really close to the people in Philadelphia and in Jacksonville is where I got sober. I'm back here now. And so I go to Zoom meetings all over, the ones in Philadelphia, my old home group. I go to meetings in Northern Virginia, where one of my best friends lives. And one of my other best friends who's here in Jacksonville around the corner from me, between the three of us, we started a meeting that's called the 7 at 7. And it meets 7:30 on Friday mornings. And it's a Zoom meeting. It's not a physical meeting. And we started it because the three of us wanted to be together. What happened was our friends from my friend in D.C., his friends in AA, we got close too. And the people in Philly my friends down here got close to them. And so we wanted to start a meeting where we could all go. And so that started that. And there's a, I'm pretty sure it's on the directory on the world.
Yeah, meeting guide.
I'll include
a link to that meeting in the show notes, as well as a link to the meeting guide app, which has been so helpful for finding meetings. How else do you find meetings? You mentioned a lot of people, but how else do you find meetings?
So what happens is, because I've been around for a while, I get people that say, hey, this person needs help with this. And they might be somebody in another part of the country, and maybe they'll go to a meeting nearby, or I'll get invited to a meeting. The other night I was intending on going to the Sunrise Semester meeting in Philadelphia. And about 10 o'clock, my friend sent me a text that said, hey, this newcomer's been struggling. Can you go to the 7 a.m. meeting, which happened to be here at the Jacksonville Beaches? And I thought it was ironic because I really hadn't been to very many of them local meetings because I came back to Florida 3 days before the shutdown. And so I went to the meeting and I saw people there that I've known many, many years and I hadn't seen. So it just warms my heart, and the community is just so incredible and so powerful for all of us. And I think that's something that if you're listening to this and you're new and you're debating or you're investigating, or it's not something you need to miss, because it's there, you're going to meet people and things are going to be beyond your wildest imagination. And that's another miracle that's happened. I mean, there aren't too many, like I started saying at the beginning, there's a lot of suggestions, but there's not very many absolutes where they actually talk about facts in the book. And this is one of them. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. So it's saying it's a fact. And so if you do these things the way we were instructed to, and you try them out, you're going to find that the same thing's going to happen to you. It may not be exactly the way I experience it, because everybody has different experiences, but you will experience the fact, and you will change, and you will be, it's nothing short of a metamorphosis, because I am literally 20 people removed from the guy that came into these rooms, afraid, scared, full of shame. And I'm not going to say that all those things are gone. I never know when they show up again, but I am not that person today. Today I have tools that I use, you know, when I'm, if the tapes start talking to me that I'm not good enough or I'm less than, heck, maybe even that, oh, the Latino stuff starts popping up. I have tapes today to tell me, God, that's such a lie. You're this person. You're a good husband. You're a caring individual. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's right. And so I have to utilize my toolbox that I have, and I use it quite a bit. So I know you asked about meetings, but sorry, I went on that.
No, it's great. I think it's so helpful. Yeah. You know, access to meetings during the pandemic has been so powerful. And, you know, something unexpected has happened where, you know, you talked about it, being able to attend meetings around the planet. One of the things that affected me early on was my fear around going to meetings. I was afraid that I would go into a meeting and I would see somebody that I knew, or someone would see me. And, you know, you can attend a meeting today on Zoom halfway around the world, and you can be pretty certain that you're not going to see someone you know. And one thing I want to say is that if you're listening to this and you're feared up about going to a meeting because of that, one thing that should really make you, you know, give you some level of comfort is that there's a level of anonymity in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When you go into the rooms, what happens in the rooms stays in the rooms, and nobody's going to come out of the room and tell anybody else that they saw you. So, you know, rest assured that you can go to a meeting and be comfortable. And even if you're dipping your toe in the water, maybe you don't know if you're an alcoholic, go to a meeting, go to an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, listen what happens, go to more than one, because one meeting may not be a true reflection of the program. And that's something that, you know, it changed my life, going to meetings, learning about the program, and then ultimately getting a sponsor and working the principles of the program into my life has changed my life. I have a life today that truly is, sounds like a cliche, but it truly is beyond my wildest dreams. So Louis, I want to thank you. Anything else you want to share with the audience before we wrap it up?
No, I just wanted to talk about really quick about what you mentioned about people being afraid of who's going to know. It's amazing how when we're drinking and slobs out on the street and we totally make fools out of ourselves at bars, at families, tipped over the Christmas tree, you know, pass out on our front yard. I was at a meeting this morning where a guy was talking about that he used to pass out on the roof of his house. And the cops would show up at the middle of the night and his kids would be out in the yard when the lights are flashing on him and everything. And but yet we come into AA and suddenly we become hyper conscientious of who knows we're in AA. But yet when we're out acting like fools, we don't even think about it, you know. And I just think that's hilarious to that. Thank you, Mike. I really I respect you and love you for your service work. I view you as one of my closest friends. You know, there are some people that I really, really miss in Philly, and you're one of them. I wish I was in Philly for some of the people that I lived up there for, you know, and I think that's why people move from place to place. But having said that, I have some of the closest friends in my life here, just around the block from me, and I wouldn't do anything to change that. Not only that, once we got back here, my wife pointed a finger at my face and said, "We're not moving again." So I think we're going to be here for a little while until she gets tired of it, which has been known to happen, and I'm totally okay with that. Thank you so much.
Well, the feeling is mutual. Thank you, Louis. Love you, brother. And I want to thank you once again for spending some time. And so we'll have to have you back again. There's a daily reflection every single day, so there's plenty of opportunity to come in and share on anything. You've got an open invitation. Thanks so much for listening. If you want to find us online, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/dailyreflectionpodcast. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Reflector. You can read stories of recovery from our community at blog.dailyreflectionpodcast.com. Please don't forget to give us a rating on your podcast app. We greatly appreciate it. Have a great day.